You're listening to Justice Radio on WMPG, and this is Slivers of Justice with Rob Ruffner and Emily Goulette from the Maine Indigent Defense Center. Today, we're speaking with our Director of Clinical Programs here at the Center, Debbie Hamlin. Debbie, introduce yourself and talk about your background and what you do now.
Good morning. My name's Devins Hamlin. I go by Debbie. And I am working at the Maine Indigent Defense Center, but also working through Maine Public Defense Services as a statewide resource counsel, mentoring, helping, and co-counseling a number of cases with lawyers who are not new, only new lawyers, but lawyers who are new to criminal defense. My background is I went to Maine Law and graduated in 05, went to work for the New Hampshire Public Defenders for close to 10 years, and moved back to Maine in 2014, opened a firm, and have since landed here with Rob.
Debbie, so we asked you here to talk a little bit about how the court appointment system works in Maine and how it came to be that way. And maybe you and Rob can talk about that together.
In Maine, the appointment system works in the sense that you have certain lawyers who are on rosters of cases, meaning they are able to take or are qualified to take certain types of cases, whether it's a drunk driving case, a violent felony where someone was injured, or various more basic misdemeanors. And the once you're on that list, when someone is arraigned, meaning they're brought to court to have bail set and to be made aware of the charges, the judge will appoint, or the clerk will appoint, someone to who's qualified to take those cases to represent that person. Prior to the new public defender offices opening in Kennebec and the rural defender office, everyone who took the cases were also doing private cases. So everyone who took indigent defense cases, almost everyone was also doing private defense work or some kind of other private work, and usually using that to supplement their income so they were able to take the indigent defense cases. And I think
it started
because it was the cheapest way to do it, as opposed to having a formal public defender office, which my opinion is not. It might be cheap right out of the gate or least expensive, but over the long run, when you add in all the other attendant costs, I don't think it's any more efficient or less expensive than having a formal public defender office.
Debbie, how does this differ from other states, including New Hampshire, where you started out, in other states that you're aware of, in terms of how they historically have chosen to provide indigent legal services?
Obviously, my greatest experience has been in New Hampshire, but they also, when I was at the public defenders there, they sent me to national training. So I had experience running in, talking with other people from across the country. And actually, I applied to a bunch of public defender offices throughout the country when I was looking to do this work. So in New Hampshire, I was in an office. There's 110 lawyers in the public defender system in New Hampshire. They have offices in each county. It's run as a non-for-profit, government-funded agency, but it's run as an independent law firm, but it's funded by the government, by the state of New Hampshire. So they have, the reasoning behind that was that there was a feeling that if clients felt that I was an employee of New Hampshire versus an employee of the New Hampshire Public Defenders, there would be some bias. I was working with the same organization or working for the same organization, i.e. the state, that was trying to prosecute them. So they set it up so that it was this independent organization, independent from the state. So we had our own health insurance, independent from the state health insurance. We didn't have a pension, but we had a 401k. Type retirement plan. So one downside about the New Hampshire models, because of the conflict issues, and because we were the biggest law firm in the state, so there were a lot of conflicts, we weren't appointed until after arraignment. So there was an arraignment, and you would not have a lawyer the day there. The judge would just appoint the public defender office to that case. And then you would have to go back and argue bail for them. So we got appointed. If there was a conflict within our office, there was either it would have to be resolved within the office, or the case went out to conflict counsel, where you can work as a private attorney, and there was plenty of work for them as well.
It sounds like one of the things in common with Maine and some states is that it is a state-funded system, although very different in how they do it, as opposed to county-based systems that they have in some state, where you have the Cook County Public Defender's Office and the XYZ Public Defender's Office, where there can be much greater variation in funding, relative funding, county to county, than we see, I think, in New Hampshire and Maine and other top-down state systems. Picking up on the lawyer of the day thing that you mentioned, structurally, there was nothing that prevented the system from deciding, for example, to put a contract out and have conflict counsel handle initial appearances the way Maine has assigned counsel handle the lawyer of the day, the initial appearances, right?
That's correct. Yeah, no, it was based purely because of the large amount of conflicts that would come in through the office. And we had a, you know, a wall where we'd separate but lawyers who were representing, who formally represented a witness and someone who took a, has a case where the witness is outside the office. And so there were very strict sort of conflict rules that they had to get approved by the New Hampshire Supreme Court back in the 70s and 80s. And so they could take as many cases as possible. I think they take 90 some odd percent of the indigent cases in New Hampshire.
Can you back up a little bit and say, if for somebody who's had no prior involvement in this system, how are they going to know what to do when they, you know, they arrive at their arraignment? How do they get an attorney and kind of what that process looks like for people
in New Hampshire?
In Maine.
So there are two branches to that. One would be if you are summoned or have made bail, so you're not in custody prior to your arraignment. And one would be if you're in custody prior to your arraignment. And the in custodies would be brought to court 48 hours after arrest, excluding holidays and weekends. And in Portland, that's Monday, Wednesday, Fridays. And you, there would be a lawyer of the day there who would review the charges with you, make sure you understood what you're charged with, and argue bail if bail's, if it's an appropriate case to be arguing bail for, or if bail's, if the timing is right to be arguing bail. So there'll be a lawyer of the day there who would explain what's happening to you. You would then get appointed a lawyer from this roster that I was speaking about earlier. Usually not the lawyer who's meeting with you on that day, the lawyer of the day, who's only there just for that day, for your initial appearance before court. Similarly, when you're not in custody, they just don't happen as frequently because you're not in custody at the time. There's another lawyer of the day there who explains your rights to you, explains the process. There's also a video that you're supposed to watch that it goes through all that. And then you're also appointed a lawyer. If your case has a potential for a jail sentence, that's the only way you actually get appointed a lawyer.
So Debbie, I want to talk a little bit about some of the strengths from a, you know, a formal public defense system like New Hampshire has versus what Maine has traditionally had until very, very recently with fully assigned counsel system. And if you could just in a few minutes sort of touch upon some of the strengths that come from that, from the public defender system, starting with the onboarding process of new attorneys, for example.
So when I was hired, very similar to being hired into a law firm where you're in entering class, and I had 5 weeks of training, basically Monday through Thursday, 8 hours a day. I also was carrying a caseload of about 20 at the time. And so we had there was a room up in Concord that we met, a big conference room. And I think there were 18 incoming lawyers in my class. And we would go through, we would have training, and they would bring in, if we were practicing a cross-examination for a domestic violence case, they would bring in an actor from the local theater troupe to play that person, and we would have to practice cross-examining them in front of everyone else, and then we would get feedback. The sort of training period, the 5 weeks, culminated with us having to do a mock trial where we got a fact pattern, witnesses, witness statements, and witness list. And then the senior lawyers, sort of 10 to 20 years of experience at the public defenders, plus some of the training staff would be the judges. And so we would get critiqued on our how we did in this mock trial. So that was the onboarding. And then I had a mentor for the first 3 years. You get a review every year. I had a mentor for the first 3 years. And then I had an office of 20 other lawyers to ask questions of. We had 5 investigators on staff and 5 support staff. So I had my own, they called them secretaries, which I know is somewhat antiquated, but my own support staff who would, it was basically designed so that all I had to focus on was defending my clients. I didn't have to worry about health insurance. I had 6 weeks of paid vacation by the time I left. I didn't have to worry about billing. I just got a check and my salary went up every year with a big increase every 3 years. And all I had to do was worry about my cases were open for me, closed for me. I just had to worry about defending my clients.
Can you talk a little bit about, from your perspective, some of the benefits of having a formal system with someone at the head of that, as well as sort of not just mentors, people above you in the office, but a sort of coordinator or head of the offices in the different counties, how that affected interacting with the system, not just not with clients, but in terms of how policy and how decisions were made system-wide and locally, that from your perspective?
I know there was an expectation that you would go very deep into the cases. So it wasn't you're going to have 180 open cases and get the files, you walk into court and plea your clients out. The expectation was that they were able back in the day, and this is, I will answer your question, but sort of a background. Back in the day, in the 70s and 80s, they were able to convince the legislature to give them enough money to hire enough lawyers. So our caseloads were always under 100, probably around 65 to 85. And they really tried to maintain that. And I mentioned that because the expectation was that you were going to prep every case for trial. And we had lots and lots of trials. And I think part of that philosophy, that ethos that you have when everyone is sort of in this kind of trial mode, it kind of feeds on itself. And you get this sort of, oh, this is the expectation that we're going to have a trial. And if it resolves the other way, then great. But I think that that helped drive a lot of the system, the underlying system within the state. And that's sort of from the bottom up. From the top down, there was an appellate defender office. And so they would do all the appeals, whether it was if we lost at trial or lost a motion hearing or motion to suppress. And they would then have certain areas that they wanted us to focus on so that we could have a coordinated sort of effort in front of the Supreme Court. And so they would give us trainings, be like, hey, here's some new areas that we're trying to work on convincing the Supreme Court. This is the way the New Hampshire Supreme Court, this is the way we should be handling the, excited utterance or hearsay or, the vehicle search or what have you. And so they would have sort of this overview of how we should be handling those issues, which I think helped direct a kind of upwards trajectory towards the Supreme Court.
You're listening to Slivers of Justice on Justice Radio with Rob Ruffner and Emily Gillette. And we're speaking with Debbie Hamlin, Director of Clinical Programs at the Maine Indigent Defense Center. Debbie, do you think that there was an impact in the system in terms of policy decisions made by the legislature and the judicial branch in New Hampshire in a way that we haven't seen in Maine, because we haven't had until very recently any public defender office?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about this a lot, just in terms of how systematically where the differences lie. And I'll say that maybe it's because the office I was in had a very sort of oil and water relationship with the county attorney. So there are county attorneys in New Hampshire versus district attorneys. So everything was a battle. We had a very sort of contentious relationship, and to be fair, it is a adversarial system. But when I moved to Maine, it's a much more congenial place in terms of my relationship with the DA's office. Is that because there was a public defender office, or in spite of it? And I don't know. I don't know those answers. Did we get better resolutions, or is the case law better in New Hampshire because there's a public defender system? Potentially. I don't know. I do know that there are a lot of formal public defenders on the New Hampshire Supreme Court, so that could be part of the reason. I don't know if there, I can't really point to one systematic piece that I see as a driving force between the differences in terms of legislature and the like.
What was the title for the, wasn't the chief public defender in New Hampshire, but was it the executive director?
Director, yeah. And they reported to the judicial council, I think it was called, which would be kind of like the commission in Maine.
As far as you know, was the executive director regularly during legislative sessions called upon, given an opportunity besides just public comment to participate in the legislative process the way it's sort of the AG's does?
Yes. And especially when they were facing these big budget cuts in 07, 08 with the financial crisis. I know Chris Keating, who was the ED when I was there, they were fighting tooth and nail in the legislature for the budget that they were asking for. And I think a lot of it gets funneled through I'm trying to remember the name. I think it's the Judicial Council, and they do a lot of legislative work on behalf of the public defenders as well.
Debbie, I want to pause you for a second. I think something that people will be really interested in, because it's kind of the most important aspect of this whole system, is how the way things are set up, how is that impacting clients? So if you could talk a little bit about here versus New Hampshire, how you see strengths and weaknesses for how clients are being impacted. Or maybe Rob too, at representing clients here and other people in the office that are doing so, how you see clients being impacted.
Well, I was gonna ask about the same thing. I mean, especially when you talk about, I guess maybe contrast the quote unquote onboarding process for a new attorney in Maine traditionally, who's, not in an office, and how that impacts the clients, for example, and maybe also the sort of the psychological support that you're expected to go deep in every case and prepare it as if it was going to be a trial, and how that, if you have an opinion, impacts the services, the representation that the clients receive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we were taught you had to know more about the case than anyone else in the courtroom. And I think, you hear that at national trainings, and I think that should be the minimum standard. And when clients understand that and know that and feel that, they're going to feel better, like their representation is better. And that's certainly not to say that there aren't amazing lawyers in Maine who do that. But I know that there were times when I was in New Hampshire and I was like, oh, this is really hard, or this is, I don't want to prepare for my fourth trial in a row. But then you would go back to the office and it was just that it wasn't like, this is what you do, so suck it up. It was like, there was so much support there and everyone was doing the same thing and everyone was getting excited about this motion to suppress. There was a sort of, everything fed on each other, fed on itself, so that when you had tough moments or moments when you were really tired and you just didn't want to sort of do that next level of preparation, there were people, everyone else was doing the same thing. And so there's this kind of momentum, and you're answerable to the other people in your office. That was another piece. It was like, not like they were looking out for you or looking over your shoulder, but the expectation, they had the similar expectations of themselves. And so there was sort of a, Yeah, you're answerable to other people in the office. And I think that really drove a lot of kind of deeper work on cases.
How do you think it impacted maybe results or resolutions for clients? But also independent of that, do you think that sort of support and philosophy trickled down in terms of how clients felt about their attorneys and the representation or confidence, that they had in them? The first word wasn't a word, but you know what I meant. Like they felt that they're getting good did they feel that they were getting good representation just because of the sort of the philosophy that was sort of, everywhere within the offices and therefore, felt that they were actually getting better results?
It's hard to say because they didn't know any different, right? So they didn't have a comparison. I would hope yes, but it's hard to say. I can't say one way or another. And certainly I had clients who were not happy with me, but they might not have been happy with Public Defender Office. And, this is another thing. It was like you would go to court and the judges had your back too. Like it was, you would go to court and a client was trying to fire you and we weren't allowed to withdraw from cases unless it was a direct conflict. And so when someone was trying to fire us, we would say to the judge, I'm ready, willing, and able to represent this person. And then the judge would make a decision whether the client was able to fire us. And the judges would always get up there and say, these are the best criminal defense lawyers and some of the best lawyers in New Hampshire. This is all they do every day. They are trained to do this, whatever. So, and I remember one judge said to a client who was trying to fire me, they're not your friend. You're not here to be your friend. Like they are going to give you hard.
We're not always going to tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah, right. That's the best way to say it. And I was like, thank you. And her actually name is Tina Nato, which is funny. So when I moved to Maine, I was like, huh? It was the right thing to say at that moment.
Just as an aside before we transition, when you mentioned sort of a direct conflict, there's sort of conflicts where an office or an attorney is required. There's no discretion to withdraw, like the witness is my sister or the victim is my mother. You have to withdraw. And then there are other conflicts where it's not mandatory. And so when you mentioned that you were in court, those were for non-mandatory issues.
Correct.
Transitioning to Maine a little bit, what do you think in the time we have left, what is, and you can pick amongst these, what are you aware of that's in the work for changes that will make the system better? What do you think the public should be advocating for a better system that serves their communities? And what should attorneys be advocating for if they see the system not working?
I think the fact that there are public defender offices opening is a huge step in the right direction. And obviously I am completely biased in that opinion because I had such a great experience and not everyone has that great of an experience. But so I think the fact that they are opening public defender offices, I think is a great benefit. I think that they're trying to increase the training, which I think is great for lawyers. And I wish that there was more. I mean, in order to start taking cases right now in Maine, you have to have taken the bar, do an 8-hour minimum standards training on criminal defense. And I think it needs to be a lot more than that. The flip side of that is it's why it's so hard when you're not salaried employees, because taking a week out of your or 2 days to take any number of trainings to become qualified to take cases. I know that MPDS, Maine Public Defense Services, now pays for a lot of the trainings, but it's still time out of the day. I don't know. I think increased training and continue with the movement towards public defender offices are the good things that are happening.
How do you see, and what are your hopes for the clinical program here at the Maine Indigent Defense Center, and how you want to grow that? Do you think it can have a role in developing and improving our system? And what are any changes or hopes do you have for that related to student attorneys?
Yeah, yeah. I think that so when I was in New Hampshire, we would have 30, 35 interns every summer. And they were able to take cases as a student attorney, as long as they had another attorney with them who was duly licensed and part of the public defender office. And so I think that's a big hurdle to people wanting to do, say, an externship in here or some sort of clinical rotation where, as it stands right now, all they can do is, not all, but they can review cases, they can review discovery, they can help write motions. But what I've found a lot of them want to do is start representing people, at least even on a basis where you have a supervising lawyer with you. And that's going to get you the best kind of training and sort of turn potential new lawyers into people who want to take indigent cases. And so, and I also think that, you know, Maine is a great place to live and a great place to practice. And if we can grow this program with people from outside of Maine who want to come here, and I don't know why you wouldn't want to come here, that's going to help this sort of crisis of lack of lawyers that we have. You know, if we have someone from Suffolk or Northeastern or Harvard or UC Davis or what University of Denver, whatever, law school, and they come and spend 6 weeks here, and then they go back to their law school and say, hey, that was a pretty awesome experience. But they're not going to do that if they can't start representing their own clients with the help of a supervising lawyer. Like that, yeah, I think that is the main hurdle. But I do think that if we can sort of, you know, Maine is sort of this little isolated pocket, but it is a great place to live and practice. So the hope is that we can grow it so that people will be coming here and we can recruit from all over the country. Because I was just talking to people, employees at MPDS, and the aging criminal defense population is a major concern of theirs. A lot of the lawyers who are handling a large amount of cases right now are getting close to that point where it's like, you know, need... wanting to do something else, retire or do some other kind of law.
Well, it looks like we're out of time. I want to thank Debbie Hamlin for joining us on Slivers of Justice on Justice Radio. Thank you for taking the time. And I hope that you're able to continue to grow the clinical program. Thank you for listening to Justice Radio. Tune in next time for Slivers of Justice when we interview Maine Indigent Defense Center attorney Allison Bronner. And a big thank you to Samuel James for his gift of music that opens and closes each episode in our series.